Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Well, in this part of Focus here, we'll be talking a little bit about energy efficiency around the home, and we have back with us as a guest someone who's been here on the program a number of times before, Larry Lister. He is a mechanical engineer. He works with a firm called Facility Dynamics. That's a consulting engineering firm that he's based in Maryland. He also has worked with the U.S. Army Construction Engineering Research Lab. He has been a consultant to Argonne National Laboratory, to the Department of Energy, to the World Bank, and is interested in energy efficiency and design and construction of buildings. And usually there in his that part of his life, that professional work, we're talking about very big buildings, bigger than your single-family home. But some of that stuff really does extend to the single-family home, and if for no other reason that he's a homeowner, he's interested in these kind of things too. And from time to time here, he's been on the program. We've talked a bit about energy efficiency and sometimes stressing different things depending on what time of year it was. Sometimes we're mostly talking about heating. Sometimes we're talking about cooling. But in any case, if you have questions, I know he will do his best to help you out. And the number here for this program, same as always, 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. You have questions, you can call us. Well, thanks for being here.
What up, David?
Man, I'm telling you.
As the kids would say.
As the young people would say. I'm thinking about all those folks that this probably the last couple of months have gotten sticker shock when they opened their power bills.
Yeah.
Gas prices have really been up, and we're now have been told to expect that electricity rates are going to go up. So it's going to get you either way. It's no doubt we're going to be paying more for the gas in the winter. And if you have air conditioning, you're running that in summertime, that's going to cost you more. So I think if you don't have a reason already to be thinking about making your home as energy efficient as possible, well, you're going to have
that. Oh, man, that's for sure. And, you know, the reason the electricity prices are going up is because so much of our electricity now is generated using natural gas. So We're getting pretty dependent on that one resource, and it's gonna be a year round thing. I mean, it's killing us now in the winter, you know. And last time I checked a month or two ago, the per therm gas price, which used to be around 50 cents, 60 cents, you know, as recently as like year 2000 or 2001, is now what, $1.13, $1.17, $1.20, depending on the delivery charges and things. It's more than double, and that's hurting everybody. You know, I've got a big old house in Urbana, and it's even for somebody who's as concerned about it as I am, it's really, really it's an issue.
Well, something that we've talked about, I'm sure, in the past, the problem is that there are all sorts of little places that cold air gets in, and if you could go around your house and you could take all those little places and add them up and put them together, it would be like having a big hole
in
the wall.
In fact, the research that's been done, these are all national averages, and they can vary. And usually the older your house, the worse it is. The average is a 4-square-foot hole.
Yeah. So if you think about it that way, just imagine there would be a 4-square square.
And if your house is like a 1905 house like mine is, it's probably more like a 12-square-foot.
Yeah, well, I got one that's more than 100 years old, so it's probably like there's not any walls at all.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's what really is interesting, and the thing that we always wind up stressing when I'm on, and I'll continue to do it because slowly people are getting the idea, is that the envelope of your house, and it's the walls that you can't see through, are just leaky. And the structure and the framing and everything. And everybody feels these leaks and feels cold air coming in. And they immediately blame the windows. And windows can be a part of it. But, you know, I see people spending so much money, you know, filming their windows and blocking the sun and, you know, putting up drapes and things, which is going to make a little bit of difference. But everybody thinks that, well, because the wall is solid, that's not my problem. And – I got news for you. You know, that's where your problem is. And, you know, it's what you don't see that really gets to you. And it's what you don't feel, because as the wind blows, it puts pressure gradients across our house. And we have all these places like where the framing of a porch roof ties into the house. And, you know, who makes a porch roof that's totally solid and air sealed? Nobody. There's no reason to. However, once the air gets in there, it's got a free run, often like the whole length of the front of the house. Mm-hmm. It's got a free run into your walls.
Yeah.
Not often, but as often as not.
Yeah.
And if you could strip the siding or the brick facade or whatever it is away from our houses, you'd say, oh, wow. Whose idea was this? And there's not a lot of blocking and things that are put in place to try to seal air from coming in. So the wind and the temperature difference creates air flows that want to either suck cold air from outside into your home, or, and sometimes at the same time at other parts of your house, want to push the warm air out through the other wall. And often they happen simultaneously because the air balance has to match. If air is coming in, somewhere air is going to be going out at the same time. So it gets you coming and going.
Well, we can talk some more generally, but I have a couple of people here. Maybe you have some specific questions, so I'll see what we can do. We'll start in with someone on cell phone on our line one. Hello.
Gentlemen.
Yes.
Hi.
I have a 1918 house in Decatur with absolutely no insulation in the walls, and we are willing to invest in taking care of those kinds of things, but everything I read indicates that there is a hazard to insulating old walls, because then the dew point changes, the walls get full of water, the insulation you've put in settles, et cetera, et cetera. Could you address how to insulate an older home for the long haul?
Wow, I'd love to do that, because that's exactly what I wanted to talk about. So this works out good.
I'm going to take this off the air.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the question. There is a way, and actually, if somebody's willing to do something and you want to do something to insulate your home, not having any insulation in a way is a better place to be starting with than having had a semi-botched insulation job in the past. And the reason is that insulation is meant to be a thermal barrier, and it resists thermal heat transfer. That's what insulation is supposed to do, and if it's installed properly, it will do that. So it will slow the air movement, the heat transfer has nothing to do with air movement from the inside of the house to the outside of the house. And we all know, you know, basically how insulation works, thermoses and things like that. The other thing that's going on, this other thing that I alluded to just a minute ago, is air movement. Insulation in and of itself is not designed or installed to prevent air movement. It will impede it to some degree, but just putting fiberglass bad insulation in your new home isn't going to really stop air movement unless you do something else like a Mylar or a these building wraps and things, which they're doing now. And again, they don't install those properly as often as not. However, if you've got an old home and you need to insulate, the technology of choice, and about the only one really viable, unless you're going to tear the walls off and expose them, is to blow in insulation, usually cellulose, which is made from newspaper and stuff. The way that we used to do that for a number of years was that we would use these blowers that you can rent at the Home Depot type places, and you'd get up in the attic and you blow it all over the attic, and it would just kind of lay there. And if you were lucky enough, you could get into the wall cavities and try to blow a little bit down into the wall cavities. And often those are exposed up in the attic. The problem is that stuff's nice and fluffy, and it really does nothing but just blow around nicely when nature wants to put air through your wall. It's going to do it, and it's going to blow right through that stuff. And it blows right through fiberglass as well. So we're stuck with this thing. What do we do? Because we want to do two things. You want to put in a thermal barrier, and at the same time, and at the same location, you want to put in a pressure barrier, something that will withstand and resist air movement, or a pressure differential, which is what causes air movement. The way to do that is, and there, I think there are people locally who are getting a little bit hip to this, but if you get north of here in the Chicago area and north into Minnesota and Michigan, this is very, very common, is they do what they call dense pack cellulose insulation. You drill a hole in the wall and you run a tube up into the wall from the blower. And then you sort of fill the wall. You know, you run it all the way up to the top as high as you can get. You fill that wall, that cavity section with the insulation, and it just kind of fluffs in. And it's not really packed tight. If you have the right blower, you can then leave the tube in there, and they blow it. And the installers do this. They blow it so tight, and they pack the top part of the wall really tight, just as tight as it'll go until the flow stops, and then you pull the tube down about a foot, and then you pack the next section really tight. And then you slowly pack this thing from top to bottom so tightly that it will resist air movement. And it has the effect of air sealing to a great extent to a very effective extent your house, so that a lot of these leakage paths, the things like now the problem is that you wind up hitting a place like the porch roof I told you about. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you get to that point, all of a sudden the blower just goes crazy and it blows about 4 bags of insulation through your porch ceiling onto your porch. But that tells you there's a problem. And a good installer will then go in and do what they can to tighten that up. It's like anything else. To do it right, you have to pay attention to the details. It's not rocket science, but it's something that you don't want to just approach lightly. You want to find somebody that knows what they're doing.
Okay. Well, I hope that helps. And this is so these holes that you're putting in the wall, you're going from the outside.
You know, you can do it either way. Sometimes, and it really just depends on the house, and the installer has to make that call. Sometimes you could remove brick. If you've got brick on the outside of the house, you remove brick and drill into the wood and go up that way. Sometimes people have siding. They don't want to mess with the siding. You can go in occasionally through the basement where they don't mind, you know, making some holes and things. Mm. Sometimes you can plaster walls. You can do it that way. That's usually a little rough.
Do you have to have some kind of a vapor barrier?
When installing fiberglass bad insulation, you usually would put the insulation has a vapor barrier built into it, and you put it on the front. And there can be issues with dew point, especially in a not very good insulation job where you've got where the gradient from the inside to the outside, the temperature gradient is such that you're going to hit the dew point somewhere in the middle. The dense pack hasn't had that problem. When I was working for the Army, we did a lot of dense pack work in military housing in the northern climates, and there really wasn't a problem that we found with that, because you're preventing airflow. And that's really the problem. If you allow air to flow, that's where the moisture is, and then that's going to deposit itself. In a perfect world, you don't really have to worry about it because you don't want air to be flowing anyway.
Yeah. There's one other thing real quick, and we got some other callers here, and this may be more of a problem with new construction that's super tight, but that is you do have to make sure that some outside air comes in so that you don't get build up of whatever sort of indoor air pollutants you
might
have.
Right. And we've all, most of us have been into somebody's house somewhere that was built, you know, during the really, really, you know, let's make it super, super tight. Yeah. I lived in one myself. They get musty there. That can be an issue also. So in newer houses, they're actually, when they really aggressively go after air infiltration and try to get it down, they wind up putting in a ventilation system, which is infiltration, but with control. It's like not accidental. Infiltration is accidental ventilation.
Yeah.
They'll put in these air-to-air heat exchangers, so they'll bring a little bit of fresh air in. You know, it's like a bathroom fan type amount, 100 CFM or something. And there will be a way that they recoup it through a little fairly inexpensive heat exchanger, and they will use the outgoing air because, you know, you bring in 100 CFM, you're going to send out a little, you know, 80 or so and pressurize the house a little bit. You take the heat from the air that you're exhausting, try and preheat the air coming in. So there's a little passive heat exchanger that can occur in those. And newer houses, higher-end houses that are really going after it will do that. A lot of houses still have enough infiltration built into them that...
It's not a problem.
It's not. Yeah. I wish it was more of a problem because that would mean the construction methods are better. And, you know, I see new houses going in all the time. I'll be driving around and I'll be watching. And you know, everybody's wrapping the houses now because that's what you're supposed to do. However, if you don't do it right, you're just wasting your time. And I'm guessing more than half the houses I drive by, I'll look at them and just go, you know, they just totally wasted their time and money doing it because there's big gaps, there's areas where it's not done properly. And you know, why do it if you're going to leave, you know, big areas where air is going to move in anyway? And there are methods to all this stuff. It's not hard, but somebody has to, the construction quality or somebody doing quality control has to know what they're doing, keep an eye on it, and train the crews that are out there doing it. So a lot of times these folks haven't been trained, and they don't really understand. I've been on so many jobs in the commercial sector where people are doing something, they don't really understand what they're doing. They just kind of need to get it done, and a little knowledge is goes a long way.
Yeah, all right. Let's talk to someone here in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi, I want to make a comment, and then I want to ask you to explain how, if you're a homeowner, how you can tell if they're wrapping it right. Because I've heard this comment multiple times, but I've never heard anybody say what sorts of things the layperson should be looking for. My comment is, we have a rental property on campus, and one of the things I've noticed is that these young people who are supposed to be adults don't seem to have much of a clue about some basic energy-saving things, like turning the thermostat down a little bit. You know, if you set it at 70, 72, if you have your windows open and your storm windows open, every window in the house, this one rental property, had windows open or storms open, and they wondered why and complained that they had high energy bills. So I'm suggesting that we as a group and as parents need to educate our kids about very simple things. It doesn't do much good if the house is well insulated if the windows are open. You know, they say, well, we don't feel cold. And I said, well, that's because the cold air is coming from someplace else to go out your upper story of the windows. And so that was my point there.
Yeah, that's...
It's just astounding to me. There just seems to be such... so many people who are used to living luxuriously. They have the money for cell phones, for cars, for smoking, for alcohol, but don't seem to have a sense of taking care of, some of them don't, of taking care of this world and being sensibly frugal, because Mother Nature isn't making any more gasoline, gas, or coal. Okay, so back to the question.
Well, that's your job as a landlord, though, is to help them out.
Well, you know,
I'm being facetious.
I have closed some of the windows. I have emailed them. The last time I emailed them, I said, you know, guys, we're contributing to global warming, and we're partly responsible for Katrina. I got an email message back saying, how dare you say anything about social commentary to us?
Ooh, okay.
So I'm going to have to figure out how to respond to that.
But look at those phones light up now.
Good, we are, you know. If we there's more than saving money.
That's true.
We can say, oh, how terrible Katrina was, but, you know, we have all contributed to the global warming, that contributed to the rise in sea temperature, that contributes to the stronger hurricanes. We are all responsible, and we should all figure out ways that we can reduce our impact on these things. The ice caps are melting.
Okay,
so tell me about how you know whether this house wrap stuff is being applied properly. Any clues?
Well, first of all, it's usually a new house because you have to do it at a certain point in the construction cycle where before you put on the final outer layer. So that's usually where that's where it gets done. Yeah, and it's, again, it's not, you know, there's a lot of detailed methods for how you fold in a window, and, you know, you've got a window opening and how you fold the, it's kind of like wrapping a package. where, you know, there's folding methods and ways that you wrap and go around where the window is going to go in, where how you wrap it around. There's a lot of details like that that you'd have to just sort of, you know, do a little research and read up on it.
Are there websites that show you
stuff? Oh, yeah, they're everywhere.
You know, somebody might have an addition put onto their house where this might be applied.
Yeah.
Or they might be taking off old siding and putting up new, and there isn't a wrap under there. That might be an occasion.
Yeah, and there are plenty of places. You know, boy, just everything out there now. So you can get to places that would do that. DOE has some, the Department of Energy has some good sites that you can actually link to. And one of the areas for house wrapping is that if you find some of the states, Minnesota, Michigan, some of the state energy departments up there have some really good details on how to do some of that. The big thing, though, is just to look for, you know, and it's not hard to figure out. You drive down the street and you see this house wrapped in pink, and it's got, you know, somebody went nuts with the nail gun and put 10,000 nails in, each one of which is going to sort of defeat it a little bit. You got to put some in, of course, but or you'll see the thing flapping in the wind, you know, and they're getting ready to put the siding up. And It's things like taping the joints where, you know, where the two pieces hit. There's ways to tape, and it's kind of a common sense thing, but unfortunately, it's not that common sense to a lot of the guys that are trying to get probably way more work done than they're really able to in a given day.
What if somebody's going to replace worn wooden shingles with new wooden shingles? Are the number of nails you have to put in for that kind of siding?
You mean like a wall, for walls, not for roof?
No, for walls. If the number of nails you have to put up for cedar shingles, is that going to negate any value for putting up a house wrap? If you take off the old shingles, should you not worry about putting up what's it called? It's not Teflon.
Like Tyvek.
Tyvek, that's yeah. What I wanted.
No, I mean it's still a good thing to do if you're going to do it. And yeah, I know, you know, putting nails and things in defeats it somewhat, but it really does help a lot. The other way to approach it, though, if somebody's doing an addition, and the other way to get the vapor barrier and to get a really good insulation barrier is to spray urethane. If you've got the interior wall open, that's a really nice alternative, and that makes itself that's one of the best air sealing methods there is, because that stuff, you know, dries hard. It's a really good insulator as well. And this is the hard urethane. It dries hard. It's not the stuff in the 70s that was gassing formaldehyde and things. So there's that other way of doing it too.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. We have some other callers here, and we will get on to other questions in just a minute. We'll also need, though, here to take a moment to call for people's support for the radio station. This is we do a lot of different kinds of programs here, and this is one of a big group of programs that we do that are designed to try to help you with some basic issue. We talk about health. We talk about home stuff. We got a guy who is an auto mechanic. I don't know. Help me out, Jack. We do a lot of different things like this that are basically designed to say, okay, here's this thing we're talking about. Call in. You got a problem. Ask the question. We've got somebody here who has some expertise. We'll see if they can help you out. And
yeah.
It's, you know, we do a lot of shows like this that are just basically designed to provide good practical information.
Absolutely.
Help that.
Focus 580. It's the show that saves you money.
Oh, yeah.
There's another slogan for you.
The show that saves you money.
I'm trying to get into marketing here. I'm not sure
There's
why.
No future in it.
Okay.
Talk to the people in our marketing department.
But if I could sell you on one idea, that would be to please support this station, because we do all these things to try to make things better for everybody. And so you can help that by simply making a pledge. The pledge line, we ask you to call right now, 217-244-9455. Become a member of the Friends of WILL at the basic membership level, $40 a year. If you can afford more, of course, we will be happy to accept whatever you can afford. The main thing is that, you know, we get as many people as possible supporting this station, because that's how we pay the bills. We don't sell advertisements. We don't, you know, then sort of, you know, sell you as the audience to people who want to put advertisements on the air. We're here to serve you, not advertisers. So the way that works is with your support, 217-244-9455. Kimberly Cronick is in our Pledge Center. And I'd like to hear some phones ringing. I hear some background noise, maybe some people talking.
The volunteers are ready to take the call, and where they're standing by to take your call at 217-244-9455. You know, Jack and David, we need to have raised $32,000 by the end of today. We're at $22,681, so we're on our way, but we need to hear from you. You know, a long time ago, public radio stations such as WILL were completely supported by the universities to whom they were licensed and by federal grants. Well, times have changed. Today, you, the listener, is our primary source of income. In fact, you've contributed 47% of our revenue last year. Compare that to federal support, which is just 18% of our budget, university funding 27%. So the cost of bringing you the programs you enjoy are increasing, and we're only able to maintain this service through your generosity. So please call with a gift now, 217-244-9455. We did get a caller from Flora, Illinois, a first-time member. We thank you so much. And this caller was able to pledge through electronic funds transfer. So if you want to do it that way, if you want us to take a little bit out of your paycheck every month, we can do that. Or if you want to bring your Visa, MasterCard, Discover, or American Express, we can take care of it all in one shot.
Right.
Main thing, though, is to call right now.
Yeah, and you know, that figure, 47-48% of our budget coming from listeners, you know, that's the biggest slice of our budget pie. And that means you're the boss. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, that's the way we like it. We actually like serving our audience as opposed to serving someone in their interest. So you make that possible right now by making your pledge call, 217-244-9455.
And I was saying yesterday that my favorite time of the year, one of my favorite times, is the pledge drive, because we hear from all these great people that tell us all the great things we do and voluntarily give us money. And we hear from you throughout the year, but to hear from you and to get your contribution, it just makes everything worthwhile. It lets us know that we are serving you, the many listeners in the many counties that we serve. But we need to hear from you right now to keep this great service on the air. 217-244-9455. Thanks a lot.
And if you want to pledge online, if you're at your computer on the website, willpledge.org. You can simply type that in your browser and pledge online.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's introduce the guest again for this Barn Focus 580, Larry Lister. He's a mechanical engineer. He works with the consulting engineering firm Facility Dynamics. They're headquartered in Columbia, Maryland. He has also worked at the U.S. Army Construction Engineering Research Lab. He's been a consultant to Argonne National Laboratory, to the Department of Energy, to the World Bank. He's also served as adjunct faculty member in the Department of Mechanical Engineering at the U of I here in Urbana-Champaign.
Man, I'm tired just hearing all this.
Quite the resume, isn't it? And that's
Just
part of it. And every once in a while, he is here on this program, and we talk a little bit about energy efficiency, concentrating on single-family home. And we have some callers here, and I know Larry will do his best to help you out. So if you want to give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Princeton, Illinois is next on the toll-free line. Line 4?
Yes,
hi.
Good morning.
Yes.
After about 26 years of using our gas water heater, I thought, well, maybe it's time for a change and something improved. I've been looking into these tankless water heaters, but my main question, I found information on the gas ones, and they claim my payback would be a year and a half to 2 years. However, I was curious about the electric ones. Do you have any comments which way I should go?
I would stay away from electric. Amory Lovins, our good friend.
Good friend here.
Yeah. Amory has this great quote, and he said, you know, using electricity to heat water is like watering your lawn with bottled water. And it's just it takes so much to make electricity, and then to just degrade it back to heat is really rough. And the economics aren't going to bear out. So unless you really have no gas service or have no other recourse, I would stay away from electricity. So I would stick with natural gas. Now, these tankless heaters, I've heard that they're actually starting to work out pretty well. A friend of mine in town has one, and she is swearing by it, so that's the first I've ever heard anybody do that. But it's been a lot of years since I don't have a lot of good data points on those. They are expensive. But what I do want to talk about on the gas-fired water heater issue is that there are some really good efficient ones. There's two basic technologies. There's the old one where you vent it to the chimney. Those are less efficient, but they're not that bad. The newer ones act like the furnaces, where there's like a condensing type system where it'll pull air from a little PVC pipe outside, run it through a combustion system, heat your water, and then blow the exhaust back out. Those tend to have a lot higher efficiency. They cost a little bit more, more moving parts, more potential for a breakdown, but they're fairly robust. It's a pretty proven technology.
Do you think I'll get 26 years out of the next one?
No. I don't know how you got 26 years out of the last one.
I don't either. Well, it's still going, but I don't want a disaster in the basement. So
yeah, well, it's funny. I was just up in your neck of the woods looking at my mother's hot water heater, and she needs a new one too. I'm from Peru, by the way.
Right
down the road. So, the interesting thing to know about a gas water heater right now is that starting as of January 1st of this year and expiring on December 31st of 2007, so for a two-year window, we're back to the energy tax credits. It's kind of like the late 70s, and it's not been all that well advertised. So if you buy a gas water heater with an energy factor, which is on the label, of 0.8 or better, you get $300 back at the end of the day. So and it's a tax credit, so that's pre-tax, and so that's $300 clean money, man.
Right,
So you've got that to go. Now you've got to go for the higher efficiency unit,
sure.
But you'll get it back.
Oh, okay. Well, and, very good.
Yeah, and there's a few little issues surrounding that, but in general, the tax forms for next year are going to have this kind of stuff. There's other tax credits for insulation, central air conditioning, heat pumps, windows and skylights and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a cap of $500 total over the two-year period unless you're doing solar or some of these really kind of more aggressive things. And then the cap is, I believe, $2,000.
Okay. Well, very good. Thank you for your
comment. Sure. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
That's really – I'm glad that you mentioned that. This is news to me. I'm sure that would mean that some people, if you have an older water heater, you've been thinking to yourself, well, maybe in the next couple of years, maybe we should think about replacing it. Mm-hmm. This would argue for,
ahead and $300 is, water heaters aren't that expensive. So that's pretty, getting a $300 tax credit is pretty good bang for the buck on that.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk with someone in Champaign. Next, line one. Hello.
Yeah, I read somewhere that half of all the installations, are improperly done. In other words, in terms of, where people have things added and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, that you were talking about half in terms of the wraps. In terms of cellulose, is the older cellulose not as good as the newer stuff or not?
No, the cellulose itself is just cellulose. It's not much different. I think they treat it a little bit different, and I think some of the older stuff had some pesticides and things in it that they've slowly evolved away from. But that stuff only lasts so long, and then it's kind of benign anyway. So the cellulose itself isn't the issue. It's the means of installing it that have changed.
Well, I understand sometimes in the new in terms of new houses that they actually blow it in wet. Is that right?
Yeah, there is. I'm gonna have to just be honest and say that I know that there is a method of doing it. That, I've been out of the residential sector long enough that I would have to probably research that a little bit. It's similar to what they do in commercial buildings when they blow fireproofing. It's a very similar, it's a similar material and a similar application where it's kind of like a wet cellulose. They blow it on and then it sticks.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of sticks together. It doesn't dry. It's not hard to the point of urethane, which is a spray, is a foam that they spray on. And when it gets hard, it's hard. You have to cut it out. The spray in place cellulose, it dries hard, but you could easily get rid of it if need to be.
What's the equipment that's called if you want to assess, in other words, in terms of an attic, the distribution of your heat loss? Where they go and measure it.
There's a blower door method that people use. There's a few folks in town that can do that. I used to do it. I used to use it as a research tool. I never really did it as a service. But that really gives you it gives you a measure of the leakage of your entire house.
Okay, but away from the leakage in terms of whether you've got the insulation is properly, you're missing spots, gaps, or something or other.
Well, that would be then an infrared camera.
Okay.
Now, so there's two different things. The blower door tells you how big the hole in your house is, and the problem with infiltration. An infrared camera, if you can get somebody to do that, that will show you where it's kind of a combination of where the leaks are and where the thermal issues are, because it's just going to show you the hot and cold spots.
You can't. Do you know of any cases where you can rent the equipment at all or not?
The older equipment that I used to use in the 80s or so was something that you wouldn't be able to rent it. It
couldn't carry it.
It was very expensive and fairly high tech. I mean, some of it you had to carry like a cryogenic, liquid nitrogen to cool it and stuff. I know that they've gotten a lot friendlier now. Whether they're as simple as getting a video camera that's set up to do that, I don't know. It would be worth research. You might have to research that.
And then the final one is that in terms of fiberglass, why is – I know there seems to be a bias in some cases toward the cellulose, but is there any particular reason for that or not?
Well, no. As far as the ability to insulate, fiberglass, if it's installed properly, is a fine insulator, and it's easy to apply, and it's cheap, and it's got a lot of good qualities. It's just that, like was mentioned earlier, you can do it wrong, and you can get it to the point where you're almost defeating the purpose of putting it in, just because either of infiltration, which can blow right through fiberglass insulation, just becomes a filter.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I mean, one thing to look for if you're crawling around your attic and doing it yourself. Is look for areas where if you can move the insulation around, look for areas where it's dark,
mm-hmm.
because that's where the air is moving,
mm-hmm. and
the dirt in the air is depositing itself on the insulation. So that's one way to look.
Also, the bat, but nobody wants to do that because it's labor intensive. But the bat would be better than the blow in, I would think.
Oh yeah, for sure. Bad insulation. If you're doing fiberglass, bad insulation is the way to go. The blow in. I don't know that anybody's doing much blow-in fiberglass anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But blow-in fiberglass versus blow-in cellulose is a no-brainer. The cellulose is the way to go. It's denser. It can be packed tighter. It's not as much of a problem if it's in the air floating around, like the little fibers and stuff floating around.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Let's go on to somebody else, Atlanta, on line 3. Hello.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. And I got another question on the wrap issue. About 30 years ago, I decided I was going to build the most energy-efficient house possible. And at that time, that would have been a simple thing to do to wrap the outside as far as what the theory was. You needed to put the vapor barrier on the inside. So when I first started seeing these houses being wrapped, I get, chills ran up and down my spine, because 30 years ago, we thought that there should be a little bit of air movement through the insulation from the outside, so that keep it dry, because you definitely don't want moisture building up in like fiberglass insulation, because then it becomes more of a conductor than an insulator. So is there a technology with this wrap system that it can breathe or to trap the moisture in the house? Isn't that kind of a negative?
Yeah, the wraps, wraps and the Tyvek type wraps, they stop air, like bulk air flow, as you would expect they would. They are, however, vapor permeable. So water vapor will move through the wrap.
Okay.
But air and they will hold, they will stop, air pressure from causing, any kind of bulk air flow. And yeah, they still do usually the traditional method still, and it works fine if it's done right, is to put fiberglass bat with the face on the interior side, on the other side of the wall, and that face is a material that will generally act as the vapor barrier that will keep the moisture from moving into the wall, and again, all this only really matters when air is flowing through the wall, which it's going to, of course, but not, you know, to what degree is really the key. But usually the vapor barrier, it needs to be on the inside. The wrap on the outside is an air barrier, and they are easily confused.
Yeah, it seems like if you're going to put your money, this can be a question. If you're going to put your money on something, the vapor barrier on the inside, to do it properly, like in my case, I use plastic. I use the vapor barrier from the fiberglass just because it was there. But then I put plastic up, tack that up with strips to hold it in place for additional vapor barrier. And then after I did that, I found out Canada had done some research, and they even had a better way to do it where it should wrap around the joists, et cetera, where you really seal things up.
Right, right.
So it wouldn't be a lot better to put your money in that kind of a, if that was a quality, if you did, again, you have to do that in a judicious way where there's some quality involved. But wouldn't it be much better to do that than even worry about the wrap?
Well, the best thing is to do both. But you're right. If you do a good enough vapor barrier on the interior surface, on the wall side, then yeah, it's if you've stopped the flow at that point, you're taking care of a lot of the problem right there. You could still have the one thing that makes a difference is that if you did that, and let's say you made a perfect barrier right behind your drywall, any pressure gradients and things that are going to occur can still occur through the wall system, through the structure of the walls. And if it's all wide open to the outdoors and you allow air to flow somewhat unimpeded or impeded but still allow it to flow through the walls, you're defeating the insulation nonetheless because you've got cold air flowing through this fiberglass bat. And again, that is only meant to insulation only works when there's no air flowing through it.
Very good.
It only works when there's no air moving. So the way to really attack it is to do both. And a lot of times back in the 70s when they were doing a lot of that really intensive interior plastic wrapping, it was because there was no material to put on the outer wall.
That would breathe. Okay.
That would breathe if humidity was.
Well, now this whole thing starts to make sense, and I won't cringe anymore when I see one of these wrapped houses. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to line number two next. This is someone in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. My husband and I have a house that was built in the 20s. It is covered with shingles. Many, many years ago, at least 20 years ago, we had rock wool insulation blown in with, holes drilled through the shingles.
Mm-hmm.
Is rock wool similar to fiberglass, or is that something different?
It's more similar to cellulose.
It's what?
It's similar to cellulose.
Similar to cellulose.
Yeah, it's and it's as far as its properties, it's fairly similar to cellulose.
Okay.
And the thing with, and it's a little bit, if I'm not mistaken, this is more from handling it than researching it. It's somewhat denser than cellulose, so it would be a little bit less. I think rock wool is a little less likely to settle, although it's going to settle. A little less likely to settle, and I think it tends to sit a little denser, so that I'm guessing that it might be slightly better than cellulose under the old suboptimal installation method.
Yeah. Then subsequently, we had all the shingles replaced some years later, all the shingles on the south, east, and west sides because they were very worn. So that's been done. So then I guess my question is, we haven't done anything with the windows. Is that something we might consider doing, replacing windows?
Yeah, are you talking about just purely on energy?
Exactly.
Yeah.
We have storm windows.
Okay.
We use them.
Yeah, I'll just give you my generic take on windows and energy.
Okay.
Good windows are way better than bad windows, than old windows. So there's a big news flash there, right? However, a lot of people that attack the thermal and energy integrity of their houses by going after windows first and by replacing windows that are basically functional and not really a big problem are usually disappointed with the financial results.
Uh-huh.
The reason being that a lot of times the place to go after the lowest cost, biggest bang for the buck is to go after these things that we've been talking about for most of the hour, which is getting at the thermal barrier and the pressure and the leaks within the structure of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Windows are a piece of it, but they're only a piece of it. And usually they're not a large percent. They're not as large a percentage of the surface area of your house as the walls and roof is.
Oh, we have a lot of windows.
Okay. Well, that does two things. That says, well, there's more places for the windows to be more of a culprit. It also says it's going to be more expensive for you to do something about it. So you kind of – my take on windows is if they're not functional and you can't open them in the spring and in the summer and in the fall and get some nice fresh air.
Oh,
and,
we can do that. Our windows are functional.
If they're functional and you're maintaining them fairly well, which means occasionally like for an old window, you might take them apart and put new weather stripping and stuff in.
I
unless you want new windows for aesthetic reasons or because you're remodeling or you have some other reason for wanting windows, I wouldn't go at them. I wouldn't replace windows that are functioning for energy reasons.
I'm not anxious to do that. So that's
the local window guys love when I say that.
Pardon?
The local window guys love when I get on the air and say this. But just my opinion. Happen to be right.
So where we are with, I've told you what we've done. Would you suggest we be looking for anything that we could improve?
I'm making a rash judgment here. It's like diagnosing over the air. You're kind of in a position where if you've had rock wool blown into the cavities and it was done any number of years ago, chances are you're kind of half insulated and half not.
Mm-hmm.
And there's may not be a lot you can do about it. If it's really, if it was put in really lightly, sometimes these guys can go in with this tube method I was telling you about, the dense pack cellulose, and they can actually put the tube through the existing insulation and repack those cavities.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to figure it out is to have somebody that knows how to do that try it. And the one thing I should try to get anybody listening to do, if you find somebody locally that can do this dense pack method, which involves, you know, running a tube all the way up the outside of the house, somebody give me a call. I'm in the phone book. Give me a call and let me know who it is, because I'm getting asked all the time. And I haven't researched it myself. I've done it myself. But it's not something that just any homeowner is going to want to do, and you have to find the equipment.
You'd have to find somebody with the expertise to do this, and somebody who could also, they would have to drill to insert some of that dense pack and see whether they were able to insert.
Correct. That's correct. They would have to sort of check it out and see if they could do it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if it was done badly enough before, you can make it right now. If it was done pretty good using the old method,
I don't have the feeling that we have cold walls. You know, wouldn't you, if there were no insulation, would you not feel that on the inside of the house on a cold day?
Yeah, you would. It's not as easily evident as you might think.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, and some, you know, some people's walls will be colder than others, but it really kind of depends on where there's air flowing or not.
All right, well, I guess then the thing to do is, if we're interested in pursuing it, is to look for somebody who has that knowledge or expertise.
I would do that. And if you need to, you know, check into it, and if you find somebody locally, you know, if they even have them call me if they want and say, what, you know, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I'll explain it.
Okay.
All
right.
Well, thanks.
And, you know, we listen to WIL very faithfully, and we make a contribution every year, and I would encourage everybody listening to do the same.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
We're going to have to stop here with Larry, and I'm sorry to say we've got some callers we can't take. Maybe on another day, not too long, you can come back and we can do it some more.
That'd be great.
All right. Larry Lister is an engineer, a mechanical engineer with Facility Dynamics, and every once in a while, here's here on the program, we talk a little bit about energy efficiency around the home.